From the Crate, thanks to your friendly neighbourhood record store, Southbound Records.
Top of the morning to you, Troy.
Good morning, yes.
How are you, sir?
Good, how are you?
Good, thank you. Good, robust discussion there.
Not fired up anymore, though, no?
Excuse the pun. No. I'd like if the mayor didn't bring that up yesterday with me, did he? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to come back at him with massive just fireworks and helicopters next week.
Please don't.
Fireworks, helicopters, water.
Oh, my.
No. And grinding of teeth. Hey, Troy, you bring records in from your record store every week, and we love them. We get very excited about them, and I'm looking forward to what you've got for us this week. Hit me with record number one.
Record number one. I think we're going to talk about felt.
Felt. Great for collage, great for applique.
That's right.
Yeah, great for puppet making.
Good puppet. Can I say hand puppets? Fantastic, yeah. Made of felt. Even a very dapper hat for the dandy on the way down the lane there, or perhaps maybe you'd like to make a cape. Also very nice if you've got felt.
Amelia's into it.
Felt, yeah.
Felt the band or felt the hat?
Felt the band. Okay.
Now, felt existed basically for what we didn't know during the 80s was that Lawrence, the main guy out of felt, had this idea that they were going to last for 10 years and do 10 albums. That was never discussed until after the fact. Just while it was happening, it was like...
It's not something you want to sit on. You don't want to sit on that idea. If that's your passion, you want to get that out to the group.
Well, Lawrence was actually a very peculiar individual, the man behind felt. In the last couple of years... Well, have you ever seen a documentary called Lawrence of Belgravia?
We discussed this in our small office, Amelia and I, quite a lot.
Right. Now, Lawrence, he...
Come on in, Amelia. Come on in.
Sorry. So, Amelia, what we've done now is I've just brought in one record here, but the first five felt LPs have been reissued on vinyl and also in a CD box...
Could you not jazz all over Troy? Just move in. Look how excited you are. Fizzing.
Each CD box also has the associated 7-inch single with it, and all of those are signed by Lawrence.
Are you joking?
God.
Fantastic. I mean, now the CD to the fan, the spoils of this morning,
hell
Troy.
Yeah. Now, I remember felt back at the time. I remember I went to see them a couple of times during the 80s. You all know Mike, their keyboard player.
You're old Mike, you'd know.
You'd know. Was Duffy out of Primal Scream, basically.
Yes, you remember. Yeah, of course. But, I'm like a Primal Scream playing tomorrow night.
Yeah, they are. Let's go back to felt. Now, Lawrence, peculiar man. Since felt, he started a glam rock band called Denim in the 90s. And then following Denim, he did something which he's still doing called Go-Kart Mozart, which he said that was going to be a B-sides band. He didn't want the pressures of having hits.
So. It sounds like a band. That sounds like a Smoke-Free Rock Quest band.
I don't know about them, but I do know that Go-Kart Mozart are pretty good. Their new album's out as well. But we're talking about felt again. Let's go back to this. They did, I think, three records on Cherry Red. Then they moved to Creation for the last seven of their career. The one we're going to talk about is this one here, which is called Ignite the Seven Cannons. Now, Ignite the Seven Cannons, they went to record this straight after they'd done a short tour, and by short, I mean six dates with the Cocteau Twins.
Yep, a good stint. Yep.
Yeah, and so Lawrence thought that Robin Guthrie from the Cocteau Twins liked felt, so Lawrence thought, I know, it would be a great idea. Why don't you do our record for us? So this record is a peculiarity, not just in felt's catalogue, but also in Robin Guthrie's sort of oeuvre. You look at it and it looks like a 4AD record, right?
Really does. It really does have that particular...
And there's a reason for that. It's they've used the same artist, right? There's only one vocal ever in felt, except for the tune that we're going to hear, because when Robin Guthrie was producing it, he went, oh, I've got an idea. He phoned upstairs, said, Liz, can you come down and do the vocals on this song with Lawrence, please?
So, oh, stop it.
So Liz Fraser from the Cocteau Twins is on this one. And the other thing about it is that he made
Lawrence... I would be surprised if your next two records even rise to the interest of these ones, of this particular one. We'll see, but carry on.
Okay, we'll see. The other thing is that Robin Guthrie made Lawrence sign a contract before they recorded it. And the contract said, I, Lawrence, will not be present for the mixing of this album. So Lawrence was banned for the mixing. Subsequently, Lawrence being a control freak to the point where such a perfectionist that he was very upset that an album came out where there was a different amount of songs on each side. It had to be balanced. It had to be the same. Lawrence heard the album and thought, oh no, this sounds like shit Cocteau Twins. Okay? All these years later, this 1985 album, he has gone back to the master tapes and tried to un-Cocteau it. On six of the songs on here, he has tried to un-Cocteau it. However, Robin Guthrie was very smart at the time. He put the effect straight to tape. But one thing that both Lawrence and Robin agreed on is the single from the album, Primitive Painters, was so good that they took it to a different London studio and did a special mix for it at the time to become the single. This was the first hit single that Felt ever had. Already you're going to say, oh, that's not so much like Felt, that's kind of like...
Mighty Purdy.
Yeah. Are you waiting for the dulcet tones of Lawrence or?
Not sure what I'm waiting for. Oh, I like that good solid organ in there.
Hi, Duffy.
It's a bit thin in the mix, though, isn't it?
It's pretty Robin Guthrie, yeah.
What year was this?
85.
Wow, it sounds like a time, doesn't it? It's awesome. I've never heard this before. Haven't I? Well, yeah, maybe that's why it reminds me of a time. I don't know. I've an impressive memory, Troy, but it's not watertight.
This album has a special place in my heart because it's the only Felt album that I'm going to be fully nerding out
now.
It's the only Felt album that has both Duffy, the keyboard player, and Maurice Deebank, the original guitarist who's doing all the Spanish flourishes.
Well, I say there's some great flourishing in there.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find this is also the last tune that Maurice played on.
This specific one.
I think so.
His final flourish, if you will.
Yeah. It's always... But I
don't think I've ever seen you so happy.
I just really like it felt. I really like this album, but I don't know. It's... I feel like the Cocteau twinsiness is slightly distracting at times.
There's worse things in the world to be distracted by, though.
Oh, no, definitely. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like comparing delicious chocolate with, like, very tasty custard.
Creme brulee or something.
Yeah. Yeah,
Which is a tasty custard,
like,
by the way, creme brulee.
These are both really good, but I have to say which one's better. Yeah, like, that's about sure. Albums.
So when you say hit, Troy, how big a hit was it? What are we talking?
I mean, this actually...
6 weeks at number one?
Well, no, not quite that. But, weirdly enough, it made a higher chart position than any Cocteau Twins record had.
Oh, burn!
Yeah. And in fact, at this point, higher than any Smith single. So, Felt were, like, kind of big at the time. I will say, though, that it's not... the most unfelt like felt record, this one.
I would what are your thoughts on this?
It's not the most unfelt like felt record.
No, I would
so
say.
So you think
that
it's more felt than other felt records?
Yes.
Man and Monkey in the Moon?
Yes, exactly.
Not. What about Train Above the City?
Okay, we're straying from the album available. Okay, Troy, so that's in the store now. What are the fancy gizmo? You got signed, you've got like a free bounty council or what?
Well, no, the CD versions with the 7-inch and everything will be out next week, but the vinyl versions of the first 5 felt LPs are now in store. You will also want the very first felt LP. The Crumbling.
I don't have that. I'm very excited to get a copy of that.
And Splendor.
Right. So like I said, the next two artists are better be show pony, super duper kick ass. What have you got, Troy?
Well, I think we actually do have one here that might fit that bill. Let's have a look. Let's have a look at this one.
Over here. Who's that? Okay.
Never heard of him.
Miles Davis. Doobop. Kick-ass album cover.
This was during his excellent pants phase.
When was he not having an excellent pants phase?
Well, he had, he was well-dressed, but then went through a kind of...
Just pants.
Blouson kind of,
just pants.
Just weird prints, really good pants.
Songs like Mystery, The Doobop Song, Chocolate Chip, High Speed Chase, Blow, Sonia, Fantasy, Duke Booty, and Mystery, Reprise, end bracket.
Now, this was the final ever Miles Davis album. It was recorded sort of mid-1991. By the end of 1991, Miles had died. And the record was all...
Looks fairly healthy on the cover.
Well, he does, yeah.
I suppose they make it look like that, don't they?
Well, no, I think he did look pretty good right up to the end. It's said that the reason he died is almost the same reason that he lost his voice, so he talked like that forever, was he lost his temper. He was ill and he was in hospital and he got into such a fury he had a brain embolism.
Wow.
Miles Davis angered himself to death. How's that?
Yeah.
That's one of the theories. One of the
I truly believe that's a thing you can do. And this is on 180 gram audiophile vinyl pressing. This is a re-release, obviously.
It is. Now, it's not one that that people are particularly fond of. And the thing that people aren't fond of is there are a couple of tunes on here with perhaps not the most perceptive lyrics in rapping. There's a couple of the producer Easy Mo B, who went on to produce Notorious B.I.G. etc., was a good producer, but for some weird reason decided that he was going to rap on a couple of tunes, and it's the sound of his rapping is okay, just the words are the most simplistic, and I think that Miles would have been embarrassed by them had he heard those words. Maybe he did. This one here is called Duke Booty, which was named after one of the Sugar Hill Gang. Thoughts so far?
It's a nice, it's a sharp little beat there. I can't tell if there's his pants crinkling in the background.
Now, when you see the cover, you'll know what Mike's talking about. This, what I like about this record is that, like almost every single one of Miles' records, it showed him moving forwards. He couldn't be bothered sticking with... I mean, if that guy had stayed making Kinda Blue-type records forever, people would have applauded him. He didn't give a shit about what he'd done. He just cared about what he was going to do next. And through the
80s... He was an explorer, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Through the 80s, people go, oh, it's that horrible R&B-type, fusion-y, electric, whatever. I think during the 80s, he maybe made just as many moves forward as he had previously. The record before this, Amandla, which was... I guess it was when he started to incorporate go-go rhythms and maybe some African music influences into it. 18 months later, he decided, well, hip-hop's been around a while. Let me define how hip-hop is to me at the moment. And as you can hear with this, it's not like they've just got a Miles improvisation and stuck it over some beats.
No, you get quite lost in it, don't you?
Yeah.
It's quite good.
But doo-wop, I think, is one that's... it's almost like On the Corner, the way that it divides people. On the Corner from 1973, people for about 25 years said, oh, it's an abomination, it's Miles trying to do street funk, and oh, it just alienates everyone, it's horrible. But then suddenly everyone likes it.
Musicians are actually allowed to do whatever they want.
I agree. Was Miles happy about doing On the Corner? Yes. Was he happy about doo-wop? Well, we don't exactly know, but I think yes. I mean, there was only two songs unfinished when he died, so I think that he did make the record that he wanted to make. And it sounds pretty good to me still. I was kind of keen on it in 92, though.
Would you play this to your animals on a Saturday? Or maybe that's for the next album. Yeah. Not suitable for the next album. So that's doo-wop.
Yep, doo-wop is finally back on vinyl, back in store, and what a cover picture. Sarah, what do you say?
He's hanging out, sitting on either a bed or a futon of some kind. Excellent pants.
And let's not forget to mention his custom red metallic trumpet with Miles Davis written down the side
in case he loses it.
Oh, whose is this red trumpet?
Is there something on the name tag there? Oh, look, Miles Davis. Report to the office, please. You've lost your trumpet.
You will find that on every tune on this, he's using the Harmon mute.
Oh, right, I see.
At this point in his career, the reason why he liked using the Harmon mute is he said it made the trumpet sound like a voice, which I think is another reason why we don't need the rapper, Easy Mo B, doing rapping on it. But there you go. Miles, doo-wop.
Do you think it's quite hard to say no to your producer? So, mate, go zone.
You know what? No. Not when you're Miles Davis.
That's a really good
or Mike
point.
Havoc.
what do you mean, no fireworks?
No one tells the old Hav what to do.
Sure.
For free spirit.
Back in my day, a sub was...
halfway through the game.
So we actually have quite a good section of Miles stuff.
Backwards, there'd be a bus.
Oh, yeah. We have quite a good Miles Davis section in the shop. We also have a very good section of the neck band we're going to do. And in fact, I think
I thought you said neck band. And I thought you're looking at my massive neck and going, I think you could do the neck band. No, next band.
The next band. Yeah. This group here is a group who is still going in some form or another. This record is from 1970.
They're like a really cool, noxious weed, eh?
Yeah.
Just keep on going. that's not a nice way of saying it. Let me just... Anyway, that's a great cover. Wow. I've never seen that cover before.
You haven't?
No, I don't know. Surely working in record warehouses and stores for the amount of years that I did, why would I not look at the cover of Funkadelic, Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow? At the charming lady on the front there who is freeing her mind, and then on the back we see her naked ass is following.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Second album from Funkadelic.
Tell you what, though, she's in the zone.
Well, you know, there's a weird thing. There's one version of this record, one pressing of this record, where that was upside down, so it looked like she was, like, falling downwards
still,
and freeing her mind
still
in that
with
way.
A free ass, though.
Well, yeah, there was still that, I think.
So there we are. This came out. This is a reissue, obviously, of a very important album.
Yes, originally on Westbound Records, 1970. This is the one which, famously, George Clinton said about it. Yep. That's 48 hours in the studio with everyone on acid. All right, straight away, Eddie Hazel on guitar. Yeah, that guy always sounded kind of out there. Wait till you hear Bernie Worrell's piano in this one. So, Funky Dollar Bill is the name of this one. I think it was a single at the time.
Things with piano and acid, you have to sit down the whole time, you can't move.
He's even allowed to do a solo when you hear that. Ooh. You go to school to learn the rules on how to love and live your life. But think about it twice. The pusher push, the fixer fix, the judge of quits, the junkie lose his life. For the dollar bill. For the dollar bill.
Tell you what, this is a collection of interesting characters.
Oh, yeah.
What year was this?
1970.
This is the year that I was born.
This is the year where people thought it was kind of far out that the Temptations were doing psychedelic soul. Psychedelic funk. Oh.
It's falling down the stairs.
Yeah!
I really don't want to draw the comparison because I think this band is far better, but the guitar sounds heaps like A Whole Lot of Love.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I've not pleased myself.
I'm not too pleased with you either.
Well, they're having a bit of fun with the stereo effect there too.
What do you think Bernie's mindset was when he was playing this bit?
Freedom.
How much can I sound like a barroom piano that's meant to play itself, but has gone a bit wrong?
Honky tonk without the honky.
If we lose this air in the name of wealth, it'll buy you a life, but not true life. The kind of life where the soul is lost. I mean the kind of fish for the
life. I think Jimi Hendrix has a lot to ask, answer for, doesn't he?
Maybe. And so I think there's Sly Stone.
Yes.
But you know what? Sly Stone and George Clinton apparently spent some time together in the studio. Thank God we never had to hear that. What's up with you now?
I'll tell you.
Free Your Mind and Your Ass will follow the second album from Funkadelic.
I was just thinking of uncomfortable studio pairings, and I just thought of a local one, which I shan't, for the sake of good sportsmanship.
Of politeness, okay. There was quite a good story, actually, of a Sly Stone slipping a note under George Clinton's hotel room door. It was all rhymed, but it was all about the crack pipe. I can't remember what it was.
I'm like, how did you not fuck out and I did?
I don't know. But yeah, we got I was flipping through the Funkadelic section at work yesterday.
Which is like, how one goes through the Funkadelic section.
You do, you flip on through. And we do have I'd say we have all of their important records in there. And they shouldn't just be sitting in our shop, Mike.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I hear what you're saying. But, if your voice is paid, you might come see me. Yep, yep.
Yep, there you go.
How many up there, sitting up there ready to roll? What comes to that one? Do you get it on CD as well? What's going on?
No, you don't need this one on CD. No. You need this one just on this this nice gatefold sleeve. I mean, do you think you get that picture on the CD? No, you don't. So there you go.
So let's run through them all. Number one?
Number one, we did Ignite the Seven Cannons, which is one of the felt
reissues. Do we know about these seven cannons?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
Seven. Lighting seven at once.
And also with Lawrence being so keen on symmetry, seven is an odd number.
See, I can't help but think of Seven and the Ragged Tiger by Duran Duran, featuring such songs as Wild Boys, Wild Boys, Dick, 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 Wild Boys, and, New Moon on Monday. Yeah.
No, it's not what I think of. But, so the first five felt LPs on vinyl are now in the shop up at Southbound.
Second on Monday.
The second LP we checked out today was Miles Davis Doobop, back on vinyl, originally from 1992, his last album, and one that... definitely, if you weren't so keen on Duke Booty, you might be keen on Mystery, which is a way more open-sounding thing that would kind of fit in with the acid jazz type sound that was happening at the time. Last thing we heard, Funkadelic, Free Your Mind and Your Ass Will Follow, one of the Funkadelic collection we have in the store. Sarah?
I found the note for you.
Okay, go ahead.
The note, according to George Clinton's autobiography... Sly Stone slipped a note under his door at a hotel in handwriting flawless enough for a wedding invitation, and it read, "Knock, knock, put a rock in a sock and sock it to me, Doc." Signed, Co-Junkie for the Funk.
From the crate, thanks to Southbound Records, 132 Simon Street, next to T. White Spikes.